Ava Teichman, Meal 4. Ava, you were telling me about your brother in Palestine and how you dreaded telling him about your father.
Oh, yes. I managed to put together a few words gentler than I could, that first of all, we are all alive. And what happened to father? He had to accept it. What could he do? He was very upset, but he was happy that we are alive because he didn't know anything about us.
So how did your life continue? Did you marry your husband after liberation? Did you get married then? Once you were liberated by the Russians?
Yes, we were together, yes. And my father was in the hospital, and I took everyday food for him. And one day, a Russian soldier stopped me, and I thought, now I'm going to be late. And we were very afraid of them. And he said, come with me. And he left me my house in the room. I could talk to him a few words because I knew some Yugoslav, some Serb. And I said, my husband is Yugoslav. And he started to play his guitar. And he asked me to wash the floor. So I gladly did it for him. And he played the guitar again, and then he let me go. And I told that, because we got married in 45, 5th of February, he wouldn't let me out of his sight, and he wouldn't let me go on the street anymore. And when we got married, and we went to my father, and he was very happy. He loved my husband, and I never forget, he blessed us. That was still in Tatra, which is a terrible place, before we took him to the proper hospital. And then life went on. So we lived with my mother, and then my father came back. And then we moved out, and we got our own place. And then we had a little factory, Nitra factory. And we had a very good life. But the Russians, I remember, I had a miscarriage in 46, and then I was pregnant with Tommy again. I had to be in bed for 5 months. I had 73 hormone injections to keep him, and I was voting, and I had to go down, but I was not allowed to get out of bed. Had to go down to ward anyway. Because the doctor said, when you go down, you must take the lift. And when you go by car, we had a car, your husband has to drive very slowly because of my condition. Anyway, then when son was born in 47, 23rd of November, and we were happy, very happy. situation started to go not so good. And I remember one day we had lunch at home, and we had a phone call from the factory that two gentlemen are waiting for my husband. So we went back immediately, and I took him to the police, which was a certain police dealing with kind of fraud. He didn't commit anything, so I quickly went to a lawyer, and I got him out, and I took our car away. We had to pay a lot of money. It was just for nothing. We didn't do anything. And then we did see the situation is very bad. We can't live there anymore. But I had my parents there, and I loved them deeply. But first my husband and my child. So we decided in 1948 we started that we had to leave. And they started to take away the big factories, right? Just like the German. They said, came in a factory and took over, and they took you away and never be seen, some of them. And the same the Russian did as well. Take your hat, your coat, and that's it. So we did see that the situation not so good, but Tommy was a baby, we couldn't leave. And we had to wait, and we left the country in 49 February. It was our anniversary. And my husband didn't have a passport. I had a passport. For a medical reason, my second nephew was a doctor, and we told him that I must get a passport to get out of the country, because illegally I couldn't go with a baby. Anyway, he told me what to do, and I went to the hospital for checkups, and the result was bad, on his advice, so I got a passport and some connection we had. And my husband had to come and give his permission to take Tommy with me, because he was on my passport. So we left, and we had some connection that somebody came for my husband to take him illegally through the border to Czechoslovakia. And so he left Saturday, and you can imagine the night what agony, what terrible worry it was till I heard of him. Because we arranged that he send a telegram to congratulate on our anniversary, which was true. And the telegram arrived, and we arranged to go the same night, wagon leave with Tommy to Prague. And as I said goodbye to my parents, you can't imagine what an emotional scene it was. And my mother wanted to come with us to the station, and a friend took us. And I begged my mother, please don't cry here, because we were afraid. somebody will see us, and why she cried, and we're going to the Tatra for holiday, because I need it for health reasons. And then at the border, I was trembling because the train stopped for 2 hours. And I imagined I would go to our flat. And I had nightmares during the 2 hours. And I see that Shah Tommy already sleeps somewhere never quite near. And we arrived in Prague, and my husband was waiting for us. And we went to a hotel, not him, he was illegally there. He didn't have a passport. And he came every day to see us, and one of the chambermaids said to me, "Oh, you know, is it the father of your son, because they are so much alike?" I said, no, of course not, it's only a friend. So we left Prague, and we had some friend there, and we went to Bratislava with a friend, because he was still, he didn't have any papers, only his expired passport. We arrived in Bratislava, and I checked in with Tommy in the hotel, first class hotel. And he came every day to see us. We went out and in the hotel. We had lunch there, dinner there. And one night when he was with us, he didn't stay with us. He stayed with friends. I went down and I did see a lot of people coming and going, and I realized it was the police checking up on people, if they are there legally or not. So I went back to the room, I took my passport in my hand, and I said to my husband, "You know, there are the police here. But what are we going to do if they come up to the room and search it?" Then I go out on the windowsill. We were on the 5th floor. I said, "No way, I won't let you." Anyway, I went down again to see what's going on, and I accompanied him, and he luckily went out, because he had a leather coat, a three-quarter, a long leather coat, but the detectives, the police, was wearing as well. So they didn't notice him. And from then on, he didn't come in. We met somewhere. And next night, they came up and searched the rooms. They searched under the bed, the bathroom, the cupboard, at the wardrobe, I mean, everything, but we were only 2 of us. We had to get my passport.
Because Czechoslovakia was then communist, wasn't it?
Yes, but then there was Stansky or Bennett, they were killed.
Stansky.
And who came from Hungary, and I find them, they were taken back to Hungary. See, that's why we were afraid of. And then we went to the Jewish committee, and they took us by train. They gave us names and told us what to say, because Czech people were not allowed to leave the country. So we went to Vienna, and of course in Vienna it was all right. And there we had friends, and they met us, and we stayed in the American sector and the English sector, we got our papers, because maybe you know that the one part of Vienna always changed hands every 3 months. It was in 3 months, it was Russian, and then French, English, and American. So we never went near when it was in Russian hands, because we never knew what happened. And then from then, my husband went to Paris, and he was caught by the French, because he didn't have only an invalid passport, because we did send out a lot of money to Paris. And he visited Paris in 1948, in the summer, and he started a knitwear factory. And we thought when we come out, we go to Paris, we have a factory, we've been drawn out. But in Vienna, we phoned up Paris, and everything was gone. And bust, I didn't know how to deal with it. It was in the wrong hands. So he went to Paris, we had our friend there, and he was caught and he was put to jail because I thought he's a spy. The French are no gentlemen, I'm telling you. And when I learned about it, I went to the Jewish organization and I got him out. And he went to Salzburg. So we didn't see each other for 2-3 months. And then there was arranged that people went on coaches over the Elm by the Russian there. And it was also dangerous because the Russian came up and looked at people, and I was with Tommy and asked for the papers. But luckily, we went to Linz and my husband was waiting for us. And then we went to Salzburg together. We didn't have money at all, but I would have gone to the end of the world with him, because he was so capable. I knew he would never starve, never ever. And we started there a small factory. I was a man never met before. He was a big industrialist. He had a big factory. And he gave us a knitting machine. We became great, great friends. And we started a factory. And we were very successful. And then in 1951, started the Korean War. My husband said, we are not staying in Salzburg because the Russians are too near. And we never knew what happening. And meanwhile, some friends came, arranged from England to come to look at our factory and to give my husband labor permit to come to England to start here a knitwear factory. And so it happened. We were 2 years in Salzburg. Then we came in 51 April to London. And my husband is a very good friend, Freddy Strasser, whom I mentioned before. They started the factory together. And then it was restriction that he couldn't leave the job for 4 years. He stayed there, and meanwhile I started the factory on our own. And in 52 my younger son was born, Peter Alexander. And that's our life, unfortunately. But he had a car accident and died, 66. But he lives on. My son, my grandchildren, my 3 grandchildren.
How about your parents in Hungary? Did they leave?
Oh, my parents. I was writing to them from Czechoslovakia and to a friend, because after we left, the workers came to my parents where we are, as we didn't turn up in the factory. My parents said, "We don't know, maybe they went on a holiday." "Yes, you do know." My father said, "No, we don't know. They are grown up people, they can do whatever they want." So they were a bit of harassed. They were harassed a little bit. And they left Hungary in 52, yes, when I was pregnant with Peter. I wanted to go to Vienna to meet them, but as I was pregnant, my husband didn't want me to go. So they went to Israel, and they lived there, but they came to visit us twice or three times for 6 months. London, and then finally we got from the Home Office permission that they come and live here in London. So they lived here in London till they died. And they were very close with my children, because my children speak Hungarian. But their first language was Hungarian. Tommy was nearly 2 years old when he spoke Hungarian and German, because he had a German name in Salzburg. And
when did you hear about the fate of your family? Because you were saying earlier, you know, during the war, that you didn't really know about the death camps and, you know, the full horror, really, of the Holocaust.
After the war, we knew about it, because people came back and we heard all the stories, what happened. And we went to look if we had a sign from them that they are alive, because there was a lot of notices. The Jewish places, the Jewish committee, people who came back and were looking for relatives and vice versa. But we never heard of them. and who came back, my husband's cousins, they told us they were in Auschwitz, and they told us what happened. And I lost three of my cousins, five altogether, yes, and we were a big family, but only my brother, who married in Israel and got a son and a daughter, we were quite close to them, because we went often to Israel, and unfortunately my brother died 5 years ago. And we went to the bar mitzvah of my nephew's son, and I came over to my Benji's bar mitzvah. One of my happiest days of my life last year.
Do you think, you know, because of the Holocaust and all the family members you lost and your husband as well, that it makes your children something very special? You know, is this an effect, do you think, on a family like yours?
Of course. Of course. First of all, that I lived through, and if all the Nazis thought that they would kill us all, and if we have our revenge that we lived it through, and we continue our life in our children and grandchildren, and all the Arrow Cross people in Hungary, whatever. Always anti-Semites, always. Underneath, always.
How do your children cope with the fact that you and your husband were Holocaust victims?
I try to tell them, and they watch the programs, what is in connection. The other day it was our century, and they watched it. It was very interesting. And Peter, he didn't want to see the Schindler List, because it was very painful. But Tommy went to see it, and I said, I want to see it. And he begged me, please don't go and see it, please. But I did go. I can't tell you how painful it was. How I was crying my eyes out. It was terrible to see it all again. Maybe it was stupid of me, but anyway, I went to see it. And I had terrible nightmares afterwards, because I have a friend who was with Schindler, a friend who wasn't with Schindler, was saved, she was saved by Schindler, but she doesn't talk about it. She was in Auschwitz, she lost her mother, sister, her father, but she doesn't like to talk about it, and she has got the number still tattooed on her arm.
How about you and talking about it? You know, how easy have you found it to talk about your experience? I mean, when you first came to England, did you want to talk about it to people?
People did ask how we got through the war, as we started to talk about it, they just looked at us. They didn't want to believe it, that it could happen in the 20th century, that the whole West didn't lift a finger, did nothing, and they did know about it. Roosevelt knew about it, Churchill knew about it, and they didn't do anything. Only people like Wallenberg, they did do something about it, and a handful.